the housing starts figures that came out at the end of the week were really good. Really, really good. Housing starts increased by 13.7% in the month of October, and they are now up to an annual rate of 1.29 million. That is the highest level of housing starts in a year. Obviously, we're getting the benefit now of construction activity as part of the recovery process following those devastating hurricanes on the mainland in particular, Hurricane Harvey, which was very rough on the greater Houston area, and Hurricane Irma, which did a lot of damage in the Sunshine State. So this is a very, very good housing number that came in here, and well above the consensus estimate for that monthly figure. There were very minor revisions for the months of August and September, and they basically balanced out against each other. Now, there was a really big jump in a volatile figure in October that helped this overall number, and that was in the multifamily sector. Now, we've talked about the volatility of multifamily housing start figures, and this figure soared in October by 37.4%. But there was also a rebound in the single-family sector of 5.3%. So overall, we would have to give an A-plus to the housing starts data that we received for the month of October. So put that in the plus column for the probability that the Federal Open Market Committee at their upcoming mid-December meeting on the 12th and 13th of December will announce most probably an increase in the overnight federal funds lending rate from the current range of 1 to 1.25% to a new range, very likely, of 1.25 to 1.5%. This announcement expected with high probability now at the December 13th Federal Open Market Committee statement time. And also there will be what could be, what very well may be, the final press conference, media conference for the current Fed chair and outgoing Fed chair, Janet Yellen. She's able to serve her term out into the beginning of February, at which point it's expected the reins will be passed to the newly nominated Fed chair, who simply has to get through his confirmation process in order to clear the path to taking over in early February. So we have all of that. In addition to that, we received good news on building permits at the end of the week. Building permits rose close to 6%. That's the best gain since June, and they're now up to an annual rate of 1.297 million. Once again, a big increase in the multifamily sector, and the overall number came in up 5.9%. So we take a look at housing starts, we take a look at building permits, which are a precursor of future housing start activity, and we see good news at the end of the week. And also, builder confidence remains very, very high based on the NAHB Wells Fargo survey. So all of this is consistent with increasing builder confidence, and that's good news because the housing sector, as we all know, is a very, very important part of the U.S. economy. So this stuff does matter. Another thing that happened this week was the report on small business optimism. And small business optimism increased again in October. It's at a level now of 103.8. And it's been above 100 for 11 consecutive months. So small business owners are optimistic. And if they look at the tax bill, they should be super optimistic, because there's a possibility that small business owners on pass-through companies, which is basically 95% of small businesses, could be looking at a very, very handsome tax reduction. So they should be in a good mood. And that is showing through their continuing small business optimism index readings. So that's also of interest. As far as the economy in general is concerned, it continues to move along at a moderate pace. So far this year, we have 9 months of data, and we will get an update on third quarter economic growth by the end of this month. We'll get a revision of third quarter real gross domestic product by the end of the month. But right now, looking at the figures that we have been handed, which is the first quarter figure, the second quarter figure, and the preliminary estimate of the third quarter figure, this is what we're looking at right now based on these numbers that we have. The annual rate of growth for the first 9 months of this year for real gross domestic product, that's the measure you want to focus on because it's adjusted for inflation, is 2.37%. Now, for many years, we've been clicking along at an annual real GDP growth rate in the low twos, in the area of 2.2, 2.25. So this 2.37 number is consistent with those numbers. It's a decent number, and it's obviously a number that has allowed the economy to grow without creating a lot of the excesses that can put serious pressure on an economic recovery. Things like bottlenecks and shortages and those kinds of things that generally come about if the economy overheats. But that has not happened. We have not had that problem of an overheating economy. And as a consequence, the economy has continued to grow year after year at a moderate pace. And look what that has created. It has created an economy where corporate earnings are able to grow. It's created an economy where inflation stayed low up till now. And it's created an economy where interest rates are reasonable. Therefore, the Federal Reserve has been able to maintain its accommodative stance. All of this has been happening here in 2017, and the stock market has liked this. And the reason the stock market has liked it is because corporate earnings are the lifeblood of common stock prices. And not only are we seeing an increase in corporate earnings here in 2017, but in addition to that, the outlook is we're going to see a handsome increase in corporate earnings in 2018 in the stock market. If nothing else, the stock market is a discounting mechanism. It discounts future developments, primarily in the economy and as it relates to corporate earnings. And so investors are looking not only at a good 2017 earnings picture, but they're looking at what has the potential to be an excellent 2018 corporate earnings picture. And that's good for, that's been good up until now for the stock market, which has worked as a discounting mechanism on that future outlook. It's obviously good for dividends, and it's been good for investors in that sense, because investors benefit when stock prices rise and when dividends rise. So all of this has been going on behind the scenes. We also received the wholesale price update this week. They call it the producer price index now. That for generations it was known as the wholesale price index, and then they changed the name to the same index, to the producer price index. And the producer price index for October rose 0.4%, and excluding food and energy, it also rose 0.4%. Now, that's a higher increase than we would like to see, and that's the reason that we always have an eye on the future inflation outlook. And when you look at these numbers, you have to accept the fact that the potential exists going forward for inflation to increase. Hasn't happened yet. On a year-over-year basis, the wholesale price index is up 2.7%. And excluding food and energy, which are extremely volatile, it's up 2.4%. Now, in both cases, those numbers are the highest readings since the beginning of 2012, all the way back to February 2012. That's almost 5 years ago. No, it's more than that. It's almost 6 years ago. Almost 6 years ago since we have had a year-over-year producer price index up 2.7, and excluding food and energy, the core, up 2.4%. So there's no question about it. There's no way to cover this up. Producer prices, wholesale prices, have accelerated. And they've accelerated in the goods area, and they've accelerated in the service area. And wholesale prices should be viewed as a pipeline for consumer prices down the road. So we're going to have to watch very, very closely at this whole area of inflation. Inflation is extremely important to both the stock market and the bond market. Stock market investors care about inflation because inflation discounts the value of your money over time. You need more paper currency, if you will, to buy the same stuff due to inflation. Stock market cares a lot about inflation, and so does the bond market. Because in the bond market, your future purchasing power is degraded by inflation, which requires you to receive more interest on your bond market holdings in order to compensate you for that loss of future purchasing power. These areas are vital to the area of stock market valuation and bond market prices. So this is a very big deal. We also learned this week that the budget deficit that nobody seems to care about anymore rose $63 billion in the month of October, and that was a little bit above the estimate. And, well, there's not much you could say about the budget deficit except it's basically out of control. For the fiscal year in September, the budget deficit rose 15% to $666 billion. And we are on the way now in fiscal 18 to another huge annual budget deficit, all of which gets added to the national debt, all of which we pay the interest on every day. But as far as the national debt is concerned and the budget deficit, only a handful of people in Washington are talking about it. A tiny handful of people. Most of them, they forgot about it completely. Budget deficit? What's that? National debt? Never heard of it. It just seems to have disappeared from the radar screen.